warning about foreclosures.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open. A look at the economy as trading gets started for the day. We're about 20 minutes in, so let's ask that question, where's Wall Street? Markets stateside are up right now. The S&P up about, a tenth of a percent. The NASDAQ up about a third of a percent. The Dow trading higher right now, 16 points up at 98.03. But European shares are lower, under about a quarter of a percent. Stocks rose in Asia today. Japanese shares were up 2%, and the Chinese benchmark shot up about 4.5% or more today. There's a report out today by the Congressional Oversight Panel that says the government program to help homeowners avoid foreclosures is falling a bit short, and it's calling on Congress to beef up rescue efforts. The panel's chaired by Harvard University law professor Elizabeth Warren, and Professor Warren is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why isn't this plan working very well?
Well, we think that it has three basic problems. Scope. It's targeted at a housing crisis as it existed 6 months ago. Scale. It's not moving into big enough numbers fast enough. And permanence. We're concerned that people may go through the program but actually be redefaulting in big numbers down the line.
Why wasn't the government more aggressive about tackling the foreclosure problem? I mean, we knew that the recession was setting in and unemployment would rise when the financial crisis hit. It seems like rising foreclosures were being predicted even back then.
You know, it's true. We did our first report 6 months ago and came to the conclusion that there was a crisis then. And quite frankly, it's only gotten worse. I think part of the problem is that there's been a kind of a, let's put a lot of energy into figuring out who's a deserving homeowner and who's not. And, you know, I understand that impulse. But in the meantime, the fire is spreading and costing everybody in America a lot of money.
And what's your recommendation for improvements to this program? And what do you say to Republicans who say no good money after bad money?
Well, I wish it were good money after bad money that we were talking about here. I see the appropriate way to understand this really is the fire metaphor. Our neighbors' homes are on fire, and we can sit around and talk about how the fire got started, and we can talk about, you know, which ones we think we ought to save. But the truth is, if we don't do something, it's going to burn down the rest of us. So this is really about trying to find the most cost-effective way to save the economy. And if that means trying to save some of these homeowners and keep good people in their homes and keep communities intact, then that's what we ought to be doing.
Professor Elizabeth Warren, chair of the Congressional Oversight Panel, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk about that and more with Richard DeKayser, president of Woodley Park Research. He's with us live from Washington. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Why wasn't the jobless rate, Richard, taken into consideration when this program was set up, given all of the predictions that unemployment would go much higher?
It was taken into consideration. Where it falls short is that few forecasters, present company included, saw it going as high as it has, almost 10%, and likely now staying there for the better part of the next year. So she's right. The unemployment situation is a lot worse than it was expected to be, and she's arguing that that causes for some changes to the program, basically more funds and more aggressive working out of these mortgage products.
And now that these inadequacies are being addressed, I mean, moving forward, can this cycle be broken? Won't it take more than just money being thrown at it?
Well, of course it will, and that's why there's a whole other approach. Basically, the TARP funds are used to help people work through their mortgage problems, but we've got agencies like the Federal Reserve Board approaching this from an entirely different direction. They've been buying mortgages and will, in the end, over to the tune of $1 trillion, and that's helped keep mortgage rates low. So the other approach is basically making homeownership affordable. That will make people buy these products, stabilize prices, and approach the things from more of a financial market perspective rather than directly to those who are being hit by foreclosures.
This afternoon, President Obama is set to focus his ideas on avoiding another financial crisis in the future. The president will campaign for the creation of a new Consumer Financial Protection Agency. We're going to bring in Marketplace's Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale to join in on the conversation. He's with us live this morning from Washington as well. Good morning, John.
Hello, Steve.
So what's this Financial Protection Agency designed to do?
It would give a government seal of approval, essentially, to financial products that are offered by banks and insurance companies and the sellers of 401ks and other retirement accounts. The new agency would warn consumers about investments that might be too risky for unsophisticated investors, or maybe about loans or mortgages or credit cards that have hidden fees or excessive interest rates.
So why today, John? Why is the president shining a spotlight on these on this proposal this afternoon?
Well, the financial industry has been lobbying hard against this protection agency. The banks say it would stifle innovation and choice for consumers and make credit less available. So the president's going to counter the bank lobbyists by bringing to the White House a group of just regular folks who were duped into costly investments or slapped with unfair banking fees. He's going to try to generate some grassroots support for consumer protections.
And where is this on the legislative agenda?
The House Financial Services Committee will take it up next week. The goal is to have a complete bill by the end of the year, but that's going to depend a lot on how fast Congress can dispense with health care reform.
Now, Richard DeKayser, this is being billed as a safeguard. Is that necessarily a bad thing for the financial industry to embrace? Why are they so against this? Quickly.
Well, I think the devil's in the details. The question is how to achieve this new stability. And if it's a matter of just making sure that regulation is uniform, that we don't have loopholes where people can skirt around regulations, the industry, I think, is supportive. What it's more worried about is heavy-handed regulation, which will dictate the terms of financial products. That none of that has yet been resolved.
All right. Richard DeKayser joining us from Washington. Thanks, Richard.
My pleasure.
And Marketplace's John Dimsdale as well. John, thanks.
You're welcome.
Listening to the Morning Report for Friday, October 9th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. Today, General Motors said it set a sales record in China in September, and total sales for the first three quarters there rose 55% in 2009. Meantime, there could be a deal as early as today for GM to sell its Hummer brand to the Chinese firm Tenzong. Believe it or not, U.S. manufacturers report orders are up, but smaller manufacturing firms report they still can't get credit. As Marketplace's Steve Henn reports, the industry's in Washington today asking the Senate Banking Committee for help.
Russ Reschke makes machinery for car companies.
We're in Stevensville, Michigan, and we've been in business since 1956.
Last year was brutal. Reschke had to lay off two-thirds of his employees. But now he has orders he can't fill because
our bank pulled our line of credit back in March.
How come?
I wish I knew exactly. The best we can figure out is that they don't want manufacturing, and they especially don't want automotive manufacturing.
Reschke says he could hire three more people tomorrow if he could just get a loan, but he can't. Rob Kiner, who represents Precision Toolmakers, says the credit squeeze could kill the manufacturing industry's comeback.
If they can't purchase the raw materials, it's a very good possibility that that type of work could be offshored.
So small and mid-sized manufacturers are asking Congress and the administration to offer the industry new loan guarantees. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
In a new report, Britain has pulled ahead of the United States as the world's most financially developed country. Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard has more.
The World Economic Forum has named Britain as the world's top dog in finance. This in spite of the damage caused by the crisis. Damien Rees of the Daily Telegraph in London says the forum is looking beyond the crisis. It's taking into account the breadth, scale and sophistication of financial services that countries have to offer.
There's a huge foreign exchange, there's a huge derivatives industry here. They're run very successfully, they're world leaders, and that's why Britain has overtaken the United States as the world's most developed financial nation.
He says the US has sunk into third place because it's been hit disproportionately hard by the weakness of its investment banks. Australia, which is still benefiting from the commodities boom, came second ahead of the US. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Back here at home, when Congress passed credit card reform earlier this year, banks said they needed time to prepare for the changes. But some in Congress think they should have started to follow the rules sooner rather than later. Here's Marketplace's Tamara Keith.
Under the new rules, when banks raise credit card interest rates, the higher rates can only be applied to new purchases. So many banks are raising rates now on existing balances while they still can, says Josh Frank at the Center for Responsible Lending.
They've used that time mostly to do things like change people's prices and get those changes in before the law takes effect.
That's why Congressman Barney Frank is pushing legislation that moves the reform deadline from mid-February to December 1st.
They made a mistake in first telling us they needed more time to work out the details and then using that time to take advantage of the gap.
Banks argue some details of the rules still haven't been finalized by regulators, and other reforms have already gone into effect, says Nessa Fettis at the American Bankers Association.
Consumers are in control. If they don't like the new interest rate, they can keep the old one, pay off the balance over time, and find another issuer.
Sooner or later, stronger protections are on the way. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
A lot of us don't like our online pictures, right? Well, now cosmetics company Estee Lauder is tapping into that insecurity. Next week at Bloomingdale's in New York, it's offering a service designed to enhance a woman's online images. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
So just say you're a member of a dating website, but you're not that happy with your photo. Estee Lauder is offering free in-store makeovers, then a snapshot by a professional photographer. The company will email your photo and you can upload to your heart's content. Roseanne Morrison is fashion director of the Doniger Group. She says it's a clever move.
Especially an established company like them to reach out to a new consumer base and really market themselves. I think it's terrific.
All made up, but still concerned about yellowing teeth or the odd wrinkle?
We offer Photoshop.
Estee Lauder Senior Vice President Beth Zern.
If you want a little retouching here or there, of course we offer that. You know, the goal is that you really love the picture you're putting online.
Zern says this campaign is a first for a cosmetics company, but website visitors will know you had a little help. The photo will have an Estee Lauder logo in the foreground. 10 blocks from Bloomingdale's, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
If you've watched TV lately, this jingle might ring a bell.
Malaysia, truly Asia, is calling out to you and me.
Malaysia, like a lot of countries around the world, relies on ad campaigns to attract tourists, but not the United States. The House of Representatives here passed a bill this week to change that, and now the Senate's chiming in. Elizabeth Threlkeld has more.
International travel worldwide has risen by nearly 40% since 2000, but the number of foreigners visiting the U.S. actually dropped. Many blame tougher visa and entry requirements put in place since 9/11. So Massachusetts Congressman Bill Delahunt wants to send a new message to travelers.
Welcome to the United States.
Delahunt is a lead sponsor of a bill that would launch a massive promotional campaign for America abroad. Overseeing it would be a new nonprofit under the Department of Commerce called the Corporation for Travel Promotion. Some states and tourist attractions already run ads overseas. But that's not enough, says Adam Sachs, managing director of Oxford Economics USA.
It's one thing that New York and Las Vegas and California have international campaigns, but there is no brand America being developed.
Delahunt's bill would charge visitors from countries without visa requirements a $10 fee. The Corporation for Travel Promotion would get up to $100 million of that money each year, and the U.S. travel industry would match it in private donations. It's a good deal, says Jeff Freeman, senior vice president with the U.S. Travel Association.
We are so affected by the downturn in travel that we're willing to put hard cash on the table to bring more visitors to the United States.
The promotional campaign would explain the U.S. entry process step by step. Still, the European Union complains that forcing some travelers to pay a fee is hardly welcoming, but it will help America's bottom line. The program is projected to reduce the budget deficit by $425 million in the next 10 years. The Senate will vote on the bill in the next couple weeks. In Washington, I'm Elizabeth Threlkeld for Marketplace.
Last year, maple syrup producers in the United States turned out more than 2 million gallons of the sticky stuff. Demand for syrup continues to grow, but there are only so many mature maple trees to tap. So one researcher developed a better way to get it. From Vermont Public Radio, Ross Sneed reports.
Tim Perkins watches as a factory production line turns out what looks like a series of toy rockets. A plant biologist, Perkins designed the contraption at the University of Vermont. It's not a plaything, but it could bring a whole lot of joy to maple syrup makers. His creation is a nylon spout about 2 inches long that fits onto the end of a traditional maple syrup tap.
With the valve in here, sap can't move backwards. Keeps the tap hole clean and allows the sap to run longer in the springtime.
Maple sap only runs when temperatures drop below freezing at night and then warm above freezing during the day, a season of about 4 to 6 weeks in spring. Perkins spouts help keep the sap flowing during that period because they prevent tap openings from scabbing over. In field tests, the new devices allowed syrup makers to roughly double production. Perkins is working to sell the spouts with a company called Leader Evaporator Works in Swanton, Vermont. Company Vice President Bruce Gillen says he had orders for 3 million spouts before the factory even started churning them out.
It could be one of the biggest things that's happened with the maple industry.
Gillen expects orders to reach 20 million by next season. Production of maple syrup has grown by about 50% over the past few years as consumers in Japan and Europe develop a sweet tooth for it. At the same time, many food producers are starting to use it as an alternative to sugar. Catherine Stevens directs marketing for a group of syrup producers in Vermont.
It is now being viewed as an all-natural sweetener to use in recipes that everyone is cooking with.
Prices are now about $10 a gallon higher than they were 2 years ago. Damian Brannon crosses a cow pasture to get to his maple forest in Fairfield, Vermont. He's one of thousands of syrup producers in New England.
I think we can produce a lot of it. I think if they market it right, we can't produce enough to supply the markets.
He'll sure try, though. He tested the new spouts on a quarter of his 6,000 taps last spring. Next season, he'll put the new spouts to work on all of his trees. In Colchester, Vermont, I'm Ross Sneed for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day, have a couple of pancakes, and hope you have a nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.